So welcome along to our little outline at the beginning of the book of Deuteronomy, or whatever point of the book of Deuteronomy you're at the minute. We hope again you're enjoying it. And there's a few little interesting things that we can add into today's outline, which tells us a little bit more about the chronological version of the Bible that we're following through. And this is maybe, well, it's not, no, we saw this a little bit at the start of the book of Genesis, whenever at the initial outset of our year's audio Bible. We dipped in and out of different books, and then we went into the book of Job. So we have come across that a little bit, but maybe you've forgotten about that. We're a couple of months in, middle of March, or beginning of March, when we get into the book of Deuteronomy. And through the Torah has been quite straightforward, really. There are little bits we've dipped in and out of, and such as today, when we start the book of Deuteronomy, we start it in day 65, in its fullness in chapter 4, but since day 53 there have been snippets of it coming in, really at the beginning of the book of Numbers, and the camps are told to set out there, and then we get these little snippets in the book of Deuteronomy. And so there are little bits, and that's that triangle approach we talked of towards the book of Leviticus and Numbers, where we have this kind of triangle form of the Torah, where we go up to the center part, which is Leviticus, and we kind of fall down each side of it. We go up the way with the book of Numbers when they come towards Mount Sinai, and then they set out towards the promised land from Mount Sinai in Numbers and Deuteronomy. And then we come to this book as Deuteronomy as such. And so we'll look through it today. We like to talk a little bit about the name. So this is again using the ESV. We're using the ESV, the Interpreter's Bible, and the Stone Edition of the Torah. The name Deuteronomy derives from the Greek for second law, an early mistranslation, the ESV says, of a copy of this law, which is found in chapter 17, verse 18. And Deuteronomy emphasizes that its laws are not a new law, but rather the preaching of the original law given to Israel at Sinai. And if we go into the Interpreter's Bible, it kind of says something along the same line. At the conclusion of Numbers, the long wandering of the children in Israel is at an end. Their first successes in conquest have been achieved, and they stand at the threshold of the promised land. At this point, the narrative pauses, and in Deuteronomy, we encounter an exposition of Israel's faith, which furnishes the clue to the meaning of the nation's independent life in its land. It is the only book in the Old Testament which attempts such an exposition, and the means chosen to present it is to envisage Moses speaking to his people before his death. This second law, or the reiteration of the law, and the Stone Bible puts it in a slightly different way. The Talmud refers to Deuteronomy as Mishnah Torah, commonly translated repetition or review of the Torah or explanation of the Torah. The entire book was said by Moses to the nation during the last 5 weeks of his life. In effect, it was the prophet's last will and testament to his beloved people, in which he warns them of potential pitfalls and inspired them to rise to their calling. Since Deuteronomy does not review all the commandments and narratives of the preceding 40 years, the question arises on what basis the commandments and narratives contained in this book were chosen. However, it goes on to say in Stone again, Deuteronomy is not merely a review of the previous four books of the Torah. True, Moses spent the final few weeks of his life reviewing and teaching all the laws in the entire history of Israel. And we'll talk about that towards the end, when there are some of the Psalms thrown in the later parts of Deuteronomy. But the text of the book of Deuteronomy records only those that were relevant for Israel's new life in its land. Moses teaches and guides. He chastises and admonishes. He reminds the people of their shortcomings and inspires them with their potential. Never has there been such a teacher or a prophet, but through Moses, though Moses bid farewell in this book, he is not gone. His teachings are here, and his presence remains embodied in all his students for the thousands of years since he lived. So that's the Stone Bible, which kind of outlines it in that way. The ESV says the theme is reflecting on the nation's past mistakes. Moses urges the people not to repeat those mistakes when entering the promised land. Israel's entry fulfills the promises made to the patriarchs, but if the people fall into idolatry or fail to keep the law, they will be exiled. The circumstance of the sermon carries added significance because of Israel's failure a generation earlier to conquer the land, starting at Kadesh Barnea on the southern border of Canaan. Now that they are back at the eastern border of the promised land, Deuteronomy seeks to ensure that such failure does not recur. And almost central to this, the detail of all the laws, all the wide-ranging efforts through Deuteronomy, it doesn't do it word for word, but these wide-ranging, incorporating elements of all aspects of life, economic, family, relations, religious observance, leadership, justice, guidance, food, property, warfare. To some extent, the detail of all these laws flesh out the great commandment found in chapter 6, verse 5, that Israel is to love the Lord with all its heart, soul, and strength. It concludes that the Pentateuch, the first five books of the Bible, drawing together many of its key themes. The Interpreter Bible puts just a slightly different element. The primary exhortation of Deuteronomy as the complete book now which rests before us is the intense and all-absorbing loyalty which Israel owes to Yahweh, who alone is God. No easy tolerance is to be permitted. Israel lives in the midst of a world filled with pagan idols and idolatrous worship, but with it she is to have nothing whatsoever to do. There is no God like the Lord of Israel. Indeed, there is no other besides him, in chapter 4, verse 35. If one surveys the past of the whole earth, has there ever been any such thing happen as has happened to this people? Has any God attempted to take a nation to himself as Yahweh has done to Israel? Chapter 4, verses 32 to 34. Does any other nation have a God so near to them as Yahweh is to his people? Does any other nation possess so righteous a law as that given to Israel, the keeping of which is her wisdom and understanding? The chief emphasis of the book is accordingly on the grace, power, and jealousy of God, which should elicit from the members of the Israelite community the corresponding response of love, obedience, and fear, fear in the sense of holy reverence. The order of life in the Israelite society rests upon an acknowledgement of the lordship of God. He should be the object of a complete, unwavering, unquestioning loyalty. And so all these laws, all these that are fleshed out, all this wide-ranging, which incorporates all areas of life, isn't something that is to fence them in. It's not something just to kind of keep them in the right way. It's to allow them to live in this all-absorbing loyalty, which Israel alone owes to Yahweh, who is God, who brought them out of the promised land, who's taken them on this pilgrimage even through the wilderness for those 40 years to the edge of this promised land, and essentially gives them the answer to that great promise that has been given to them. And they now stand before and hear Moses in his retelling urges the people not to repeat those mistakes that have happened again, not to go through all the same things again, but in this way repeats the essence of what it is to be a nation which is loyal to Yahweh, which lives in the midst of this world surrounded by all kinds of things, but loyal to the God who freed them. That should be an object of complete, unwavering, unquestioning loyalty. The way this is done, Stone doesn't really detail too much of this. The Interpreter's Bible goes into it in massive detail. The ESV gives it in quite a succinct way, where it says that there are a number of similarities between the structure of Deuteronomy and ancient treaty documents, in particular treaties of the Hittites of the 2nd millennium and treaties from the Assyrians of the 8th century, have clear affinities with the structure of Deuteronomy. So the kind of preamble, historical prelude, general stipulations, specific stipulations, blessing and curses, document clause and witnesses. So all of that is in there, and you can follow through various chapters on those and the way it's set out. In the same way, the simple summary of the treaty is this structure that is a ancient treaty document, something almost that was made in that land. It's something that's set out as a treaty before God and these people as they enter into the promised land, and it concludes the Pentateuch together with many of its key themes. The interesting thing you might ask is, well, why would we read it? If it's a treaty set out between God and these people, why would we bother? Why would we have to read through it? What we might see as it concludes this Pentateuch, as it concludes the Torah, it shows the key things that God is interested in as they stand on the edge of this promised land. It gives them a reminder of the God in whom they trust, the God who has brought them this far. And remember, this is a different set. This is a different generation of people. These are ones who haven't experienced, who weren't left behind in the wilderness. But this is a new set of people going into all that God has promised. And so it is important for them to know the God who they are dealing with and the God who they want to deal with. Interestingly, as we get towards the end of Deuteronomy, certainly in day 75, you might have noticed that it starts to go into the Psalms. We read Psalm 91, the next day we read Psalm 78, verses from that 105, 106, 135, before we go into Joshua. And essentially, these are great Psalms where you read the whole history of Israel, if you wanted to condense in some ways all that's happened, all that has been through. We go through these Psalms. And so again, that's just something that we do through the chronological Bible in this way, where we don't separate each book. And then when we come to the Psalms, we've got 140 or whatever Psalms to go through one by one. And we wonder, well, how does that fit in with what God is telling us? So there's a nice little Psalm. Oh, there's not. The Psalms are always key to the way that the people saw their identity, saw what they were called for, and responded to it often in song. We're told often that Moses writes these songs, well, in the same way the writer of the Psalms puts the history of Israel into a way that the people can remember, so that it's almost as if they're going back onto the cusp of this promised land and standing there with Moses at the top of the mountain to look over all that he won't be able to go into, but all that Joshua will lead the people into. And he sings these songs, and we see these Psalms repeat out. And so that's just a little interesting observation about the chronological Bible and how those Psalms fit in amongst us. And that's the book of Deuteronomy, and we're into Joshua. So that ends the Torah. I am going to put up a little outline of the kind of Pentateuch as a whole, the Torah as a whole, the first five Bibles, first five books, and see what that looks like to us. But next we're on to Joshua. And so keep going, you're doing really well, and hopefully you've been enjoying these outlines as we go along. If you have any questions, get in touch, JW Fraser, F-R-I-Z-E-R, at presbyterianireland.org, or get in touch through the comments or the various other means. But grace and peace to you this day.